Question number 16722, Captain George Ledger, reel 2.
Captain Ledger, reel 2. You left school at what age?
I left school when I was 14 years old.
What was your first job?
When I left school at 14, I really wished to become a joiner, to serve my time as a joiner. So I applied to the local colliery group mining department, which was owned by the French people at that time. And I was offered a job, first of all, to start work with the slaters of that trade, to learn slating and to learn other allied trades to joinery, which you would meet when you were in the building industry. So I served about 6 months with the slater, learning the slating business, roofing and such like. And then I was sent from that time with the bricklayer. I was taught to lay a few bricks. I was there 6 months, or approximately 6 months, with bricklayer and learn how to plaster houses, lay bricks and fix door frames and things like that. Ceilings, and plastering ceilings. After 6 months, approximately 6 months, I was taken from the bricklayer and I sent with a plumber. And I had three months with the plumber. It didn't take so long for to get into the business of plumbing as it was with the bricklayer. And I worked for 3 months as a plumber, trying to pick up some of the allied trades with you, which I'll be associated with. Then, funnily enough, after leaving the plumber, I was sent for 3 months with a paper hanger and decorating, all through the same colliery firm to maintain and repair the colliery houses. That's where I received my tuition attendant to the repairs on these council houses. When I finished the three months with the painter and decorator, I was eventually taken into the job as served my time as a joiner and cabinet maker.
How many hours a day did you work?
I was working from 7:30 in the morning till 4 o'clock at night on those trades. And we had half an hour and 5 minutes the lunch break.
Saturdays did you work?
We worked on Saturdays from 8 o'clock until 12.
What was your first wage?
The first wage, I think it was round about 5 and 6 pence, or 6 and 6 pence approximately, when I first started, round about that figure. I just can't agree, but it wouldn't be very far off, five and six pence, round about that.
Who was it you were working for?
The French owners of the collieries which were in Birtley, the Ocean E pit, the Ramdrath Arne pit, and the Erpeth Sea pit, they were all owned by the Frenchmen, colliery owners. And we were paid and came under the French management.
So you spend a long apprenticeship learning your trade. How was an apprentice a threat in those days?
Apprentice, you had to really believe in yourself that you wanted to learn the trade, because there was a lot of for the sake of a better word, not mugging, but like you had in school. The word for it?
Bullying?
Bullying. There was a lot of bullying went on. But mainly by a lot of the lads who were mainly jealous of how you were progressing. You could do your work and show better sort of examples of your trade to others. And they just used to sort of pull your leg and do funny tricks. I suppose it was just the art of learning how to grow up. But as far as my trade was concerned, I was that keen on cabinet making, which I didn't get repairing houses. I was that keen on cabinet making. I went to Chesley Street Grammar School at night time, during the week at night time. And I had to pay my own expenses and had to pay for my tuition to make on cabinet making, which meant piano stools, furniture, inlaying, and such like French polishing.
Was this something like City and Guilds?
Like, yes, and it ended up by having to do the City and Guilds exams. This was all mainly done through a postal service. You sat the exams through the postal service, you know, you didn't have to sit in the school and do it. You just did them at home and you did the exams and they sent the results back to you. The only drawback with going to the night schools, in my case, was the money part of things. Everything we made at night schools, we had to buy all the wood, polish, French polish, and metal, spirits, etc. ourselves. So if I made a piano stool, it's there, one of it's there to this day, with its legs cut off, I'll show you outside. I made a piano stool there, I had to buy all the mahogany, it's all mahogany, with a padded seat, lift-up lid, padded seat to keep music inside, and that was all French polished, and it's there. And unfortunately for me, about 9 or 10 years ago, when I was about 60, my wife decided to cut the legs off and made it into a shoebox.
So you had to find this money, obviously, out of your wages or the family income again.
That's right. Hmm.
And your family again helped?
Yes.
In this way?
Yes. You see, when I was serving my time, well, things were a bit improvement in the family. Naturally, my brothers had grown up. They were bringing money into the family, and we were getting gradually better off as we went on.
You mentioned this kind of a bullying aspect of your work and probably your life. Were you able to cope with it? Were you able to stand up against it okay?
I was, yes. I could stand it, and I could turn me back and turn me face the other way, because I found that standing up and starting arguing just made matters worse. And I'm that way today. The bullying I understood, because the only reason it was bullying, because I seemed to do things a little bit better than they, and they just weren't, they weren't pleased because theirs wasn't as good. That's the way it appeared to me. I might have been wrong, but that's the way it appeared to me. And I just used to turn my back and just go off and leave them. And of course, there was no answer to that. There was no fighting at all, and there was no friction.
So you weren't the kind of person who would square up to someone?
No. I can't remember ever, in all my school days, turning around and hitting anybody. Can't remember. Ever. And the first time that ever happened in my family, my own family, was my own son. Oh, I ever saw it, never hit anybody. I just happened to see my own son. I went to meet him from school. He was coming out of school. The same school I went to, Riddenton School. And some of the lads behind him were shouting to him. So he just stopped and he turned around. I was on the other side of the road when this happened. He turned around and he says, "Who are you calling?" And these lads started calling names. So he just went up to them and says, "Say that again," and he had his fist up. He says, "Say that again," and he just stopped. And I didn't turn. And that was the first time any of my family I've seen any belligerence in it. No, none at all. I wasn't the one to, I don't know how I managed to cope with the army, you know, but I wasn't the type of the fight.
You've mentioned already, of course, that you were much involved in the church as a teenager growing up in those days. Were there any other leisure activities that you got involved in?
Well,
was it all wrapped around church and its activities?
Not really. No. It wasn't all wrapped around church. I had outlets. One of the activities I was involved with was 25 years. I was a member of Birtley Amateur Operatic Society. And first of all, I started with Birtley Amateur Operatic Society, working, making the scenes, the scenery on the stage, and then eventually down in Berkeley Community Centre, I altered all the main stage and made lifting floors and stepped up flooring for the people, the congregation, to sit and see them. I altered all the stage with assistance, of course. I didn't alter myself. There was five or six of us. We altered all the stage. We made it so we put all the seats from the hall stuck neatly underneath the stage, so the dance hall was all free again for the dancing. That's it to this day.
So what set you off singing? Was this the church choir that set you away?
The church choir set me off singing.
Was that an interest that you were asked to go in the choir? It was
my friend, Billy Thorpe, he called him, who got me. I went and joined the church through Billy Thorpe, from my school friend. And he was already in the choir. And when I got into the St. John's Church, I automatically went into the choir with him. The choir master accepted us in there. And that's how I started to get my voice trained with the singing to the church, the organ, church music. And we were taught music then, you see. You taught music free by the church organist. You had to learn how to read music. You see, so it was a great thing, and we were very friends from those, being 8 year olds, right until the war broke out. We went to church together, Billy Thorpe and I. I joined the army, and he joined the Air Force. He was sent away to Canada for training, and 2 years after he was in Canada, he was training with an aircraft, and it went down, and he was killed in Canada. Never saw any active service. Just during his training, he was killed in Canada. I never saw him anymore. But I kept in touch with his mother and father right up till his mother and father died. And I still keep in touch with his sister, who is alive, and she married a police sergeant in Berkeley, his sister. And I still keep in touch with them.
Girls, as a teenager and a growing young man, did girls come into your life at all?
Girls never came into my life until the church forced me to. It's a funny thing to say the church forced me to, because being a member of the church choir, I know this seems to be getting on my life, church is my life, member of the church choir, every Sunday night after the service, a gang of us, the church, the choir, the boys and girls in the choir. Well, there was no girls in those days. There were all boys in the choir in those days. But the girls, we used to meet in the congregation. We all used to get together and have a walk from Berkeley up to Low Fell, just as a gang, maybe about 10 or 12 of us. And one of those girls I met on speaking terms as a man and a woman, was when I was 14 years old, and she's my wife to this day, Hilda, you see her. I met her in that church, and we used to go, before we ever knew one another, go in this gang. There was a call a friend of ours, Billy Thorpe's sister, was looking after a sweet shop in Berkeley, beside Luther's garage, and she used to wait for the service finishing, and she used to have the sweets ready for us all, and we had to pay for them, of course, but we sell the sweets ready for the service finish. We used to call in there, pass the sweets around, and the whole lot of us used to walk up just steadily up the Low Fell and walk back. No harm, no trouble, not just carry on, just being in each other's company. And that's where I met my wife, Hilda, and it was through one of those gatherings that eventually we became together. And she's here to this day.
Did your parents warn you against young girls as a young
girl? No. In my case, it never had to happen because I wasn't that way inclined. I was going to church, and my parents knew where I was. After the service, I was going with a big gang, the gang of choir lads, where you know choir lads are, where you know what church people are. They don't do that sort of thing, you know, in those days. Things weren't so bad then, you know. People didn't think like they do these, you know. But there was not a thing wrong, or any wrong word, or nasty thing happened like that with all our gatherings together, all the time I knew them.
Was walking an important activity in those days, just going out for walks rather than going pubs or whatever?
Well, in those days, there wasn't really a lot to do apart from walking. There was a local church hall, had facilities in church hall for gatherings, for bits of dances, called them hops. The cinemas were the main point of the only outlet, really, in those days for young people to go to. There was an odd dance hall used to become open, but not a lot for people of our age in those days. And we really kept ourselves confined to the confinements of the church hall and local places like that. Apart from going for walks and fine weather along to the various lawns, various field walks across to the corries and such like.
Were you able to complete your apprenticeship before the war started?
No, I was unable to complete my apprenticeship because the war started when I was 19 years old. So,
what were the initial signs that war was coming?
Well,
I'm thinking locally rather than...
At the time war was coming, I was at the employed at Rainbathan Colliery, apart from working in the houses as a joiner. I was working at the pits itself. And I was sent up to Rainbathan Colliery to build some air raid shelters at the colliery yard itself. And the question of the war breaking out came suddenly to me when we finished work one Friday. And it was the 1st of September 1939, I remember that. It was a Friday, and I always took my tools from the colliery yard and put them into a person's and friend's house across the road from the pit. And I used to collect my tools again on the Monday to start work again. So this day, on the 1st of September, Friday, it was 4:30 when I took the tools across to the house. And then I got the bus back home where I lived at Ballymow, just on the main road just below here, near Henley Cables. I lived in York Road then. When I got back home from work, there was an announcement on the news, and my mother and father said, "You better listen to this." And it was the fact that all territorials had to report immediately to the territorial hall, which was in Birtley.
Actually, I've jumped ahead myself a little bit. You joined the territorials, I think you said, in 1938?
1938, yes.
Do you remember?
That's when I was 18.
Do you remember the date?
It would be shortly after I was 19, after I was 18. I was 18 on the 21st of August, and it might have been about September or October when I applied then through my father's insistence, because he was pushing it, you know, he did all the, get into the, and what? I think it was only 2 months after I was 18 that I...
What was the process of joining a territorial unit?
Well, I had to write away to the Chesley Street headquarters, which is the local branch, and ask for forms of enrolment. Now, a lot of that was taken away out of my hands because my two brothers were already in the territorials, and this matter was dealt with by them, details of which myself I wasn't aware of how they really went to it. But eventually the forms came from to me and I had to sign them. My parents had to sign them too, because I was underage for doing anything, you know, without my parents' consent. In fact, I was, later on, you'll probably learn I was too young to get married, which I wanted to do. That was stopped.
So you fill in the form, then what happened?
Well, I got word to say I had to report and send the form back. I filled the form, and I got word to say I had to apply a report to Birtley Drill Hall, which is the top of Harris Bank here, just along there. It's just pulled down now. And I reported there and I signed on there as a member of A Company, the 8th Battalion of the Durham Light Infantry, as a territorial. And I was sworn in on one night when I was there.
Were you given a medical?
Yes, I was given a medical then.
What kind of medical was it?
I just had to stand up, and the doctor was there, and just had to stand up. And we just had to take our clothes off and strip absolutely naked and just stand there. And he used to examine us from top to bottom. And he used to turn us, he used to say, turn round, and we just turn round. And he could feel him, his hands going round and feeling you around him. And then he would turn you back again as if you were a robot. I fully remember that. And he tapped me on the head, this doctor. He says, what have you got up there? Nothing to do with him, but he says, what have you got up there? I just started laughing, and that's my brain, what I've got like. He says, well, he says, I just want to tell you that you're okay. He says, and that was all it took for me to get into the services.
Were you issued with a uniform as soon as you went?
I was issued with a uniform shortly after I went. I was measured, and then the measurements weren't made to me, but they came in bulk, and it was more myself, of course. A few of us went in, and they threw them at us and says, try them on, try them, try them. And these were the sizes. We think those are yours, we think those are yours. And we just had to try, and we had putties in those days. We had a pair of boots, then we had the trousers, and it was a jacket then, not a blouse. It was a jacket with buttons on. And they fit all right because of the sizes. You went into the groups, you know, try them and try them. So we had not much choice. I mean, they were all the same.
It mustn't have been easy, I would have thought, to learn how to put these on correctly.
It was very, very difficult.
Was there a process of doing it?
There was a proper process of putting putties on, yes. And to this day, I think I've forgotten how to do anything properly. Because you know how to start from the inside and turn them around and then work your way up and getting pushed in properly. But I couldn't explain that to this. No, I just kind of, if they give me some, I couldn't put them on.
Did they help at all? If you got too tight, they would restrict circulation, would they? Particularly if you were marching, anything of that nature.
I didn't find that so, because you put on all your clothing, and your clothing sort of took the impact of the stretching, you know. No, I didn't find the putties hindered my walking at all. In fact, they were rather warm, and they prevent a lot of cold penetrating through on frosty or winter days, you know, only warmer than what we ended up with the old.
So you're given a jacket, trousers, putties, boots,
and we had a hat. I had a peaked hat then.
And this would be with the silver bugle badge?
Yes.
What badges or things did you have on your shoulders?
We had an epaulet on here, a badge on the epaulet. It had Durham on the side of it. And there was a little badge, a Durham and DLI badge, which went above that. Very, very small brass, and we had to clean them.
Was there equipment that you were given in any way? Did you get equipment to add to your uniform?
The equipment we had was just the rifle, but not our own property. That was taken from us and put back into the drill hall strong rooms when we finished training with them. We were never allowed to take them home. We never had those at home. We weren't allowed to. Until such time as the war broke out, then of course we had to live with it. But as far as I remember, that was the only equipment I was ever given, was a rifle, with a bayonet, of course. I can't remember any other equipment.
As new recruits, what were the first drills you had to learn?
New recruits? The first thing, to my mind, the first thing we had to learn was to take notice of what you were told by the sergeant, either the corporal or the lance corporal or the corporal or the lance sergeant or the sergeant, and finally the sergeant major, got it. And then after that, eventually, when we got up into things with the battalion, he used to have to take notice of the RSM regimental sergeant major, who was overall in charge of everyone, as you know. And as a recruit, of course, the RSMs didn't appear in our schemes very, very early. It was later on in our time with the regiment that RSMs, when the whole battalions was getting together, that you were associated and you really met the RSM. Our lives mainly revolved around the company sergeant majors, who were the men of the moment at that time, you know, for you.
Do you remember the names of your NCOs and CSM at that time?
We had a CSM, Cogburn, J. Cogburn, Jackie Cogburn, and the Sergeant Grass, John Grass, and he had a brother called Sergeant R. Grass, Dickie, Richard Grass. We had a sergeant who was called Green, James Green, Jimmy Green, we used to call him. Names seem to get me by now. But,
What were they like?
Well, as a recruit, you seem to be at awe when you first go in. You come from school and you're going to join, you've been to work and you start to learn how to work. And then you come to such a place like the army, a magnificent setup, the army, and you had to do what you're told. And that's what you thought. But to answer your question, what were they like? To my mind, they're just human beings doing exactly the same job as I was hoping I would do eventually. And when they used to speak to you with the command, word of command, and just like, I didn't take it as a disciplinary sort of command. You know, I used to take it as an offer, please do that. You know, they say, quick turn, quick march, right road turn. And I didn't take that as nasty. You know, I used to say, well, that's what they've got to do, and I've got to do that. So I wasn't in awe of any of them. I didn't look up to them and say, oh, well, he's a sergeant major. I just felt that I was on the same plane, and I did what I was told. And, you know, it paid dividends to me. I never got any wrong words. It wasn't a case of buttering up to any of them. It was just I just did what I was told. I suppose this is my church business, the church we have been brought up.
Was the language used any rougher than what you met outside?
To me, in those days, the language is absolutely a turmoil. When you come from, well, you met it at work when you left school. You got that gradually, you know. But when you got into the army, it hit you just like that. Every other word was, well, not quite.
Pretty strong.
It was pretty strong, yes. Mm-hmm. It's words which I don't repeat.
Mm-hmm. And could you cope with that all right? Did you settle with that all right?
I settled with it because I understood it.
Not that you used it yourself.
No. There's only one swears in this house, and that's my wife. That's a surprise. No, I don't use it. I can get around life without using such words, and I do. Mind, this time when I felt like giving vent, because anger, human nature being where it is, you feel anger at times. But I would always get through life without using that sort of language.
How often did you meet at the drill hall?
It used to be once every fortnight, and it used to vary, once a week, and then as it got nearer the war, it used to be 2-3 days, you should go up regularly up to the drill hall to get, just to keep in breast, abreast of news. But that's roughly, at least once a fortnight we used to meet in the drill hall for training.